Hi, I'm Pete Buttigieg, and this is The Deciding Decade. A few years ago, our country turned its attention to Flint, Michigan, a city undergoing a terrible water crisis, one that it is still facing today. So many got involved, stepped up to offer support, and spoke out, including some of the community's youngest members. For the final episode in our series of conversations with youth leaders, we are welcoming our youngest ever guest. Mari Copney, also known as Little Miss Flint, is a 13-year-old water rights activist from Flint, Michigan. She got her nickname after winning a local beauty pageant years ago, and then rose to national and even international fame when, as an 8-year-old, she fought to help Flint during its devastating water crisis by organizing a mass bottled water drive. She also wrote to President Obama about the crisis, asked him to come to Flint and see it firsthand, and she received not just a response, but a visit, which we'll discuss later. To date, she has given away over 1 million bottles of water and raised over $500,000 for water bottles, back-to-school supplies, holiday presents, and books for Flint-based families. She was named a youth ambassador to the Women's March on Washington in 2017 and to the National Climate March, and was listed on Teen Vogue's 21 Under 21. She is involved with several important campaigns and causes and plans to run for president as soon as 2044, something I'm looking forward to. Let me start by asking you about a subject that I care a lot about because I served as a mayor, and one of the most important things that a mayor is responsible for is water, water and wastewater, making sure that there's clean, safe drinking water. And it's one of those things people don't think about when it's going well, but when there's a problem with the water, of course, it ruins everything unless there's action. So I wonder, how would you explain to somebody who never thinks about drinking water safety why water matters so much?
Well, water matters because that if some people would be like, oh, I didn't know you guys had bad water. Oh, I thought, you know, your water was clean. No, the water is bad. And some people don't realize that the water is bad. But at the same time, some people are like, well, I never had bad water. So I don't know how that's like, or I had never experienced that. And people need to realize that just because you haven't had bad water doesn't mean that anybody else has had bad water.
So how did the issue of safe water affect you and your family directly?
So when they had switched over the pipes and everything, the water had got super bad. There was like lead and there was like a whole bunch of other nasty chemicals inside the water. And if you would stay in the water too long, you would get really bad rashes that resemble chemical burns. The water smelled really bad. Your eyes would hurt. You would get really bad headaches. People were dying, kids were getting lead poisoning, and it affected a lot of people because that, you know, the water was toxic and stuff like that.
So what was your role in helping the world understand how big of a problem this is?
So my role was that I just wanted to help, and I had posted about it a lot all over my social medias, making people to listen and donate to my GoFundMes and whatever. I just, you know, wanted to help, and I wanted to just spread awareness and just spread the word that Flint has a water crisis, but it's not only Flint that has a water crisis. America has a water crisis. Like, you may think that, I'm going to just pick a random state. Let's go with Florida. You may think that, you know, Florida is a giant, you know, big state, so you think they wouldn't have bad water. No, there are places inside Florida that have bad water. Like, there's a whole bunch of cities inside America that have bad water. But people don't realize it because it's not talked about enough. And I want to get that word out that America has a water crisis.
So what made you decide to write to President Obama?
It was the day of the congressional hearings, and I thought, what if I just sent, you know, a letter to President Obama to see if he would respond? Because in the letter I talked about, the Flint water crisis would have had done the people. And, you know, I didn't think he was going to respond or, you know, do any of that, but it was worth a try, and yeah.
So what did you think when a letter came back?
So I had no idea that he had wrote me back. Like, my mom had got a call from the Secret Service number saying that, you know, the president wants to, you know, write her back or whatever. And my mom was like, this is fake. And they started reading off the letter. They were like, whoa, wait, what? And then she was like, okay. And then I was in third grade at the time, so I did not know. Like, I was inside my math class, you know, just doing my little paperwork. And all of a sudden, I see my mom, you know, walk out. I was like, oh, she's probably just coming to check me, you know, coming to pick me up. No, I see another person. I was like, who is this? Turns out there was like a whole bunch of camera people, and they all came over to me and they were like, President Obama not only wants to argue, but he wants to meet you. I was like, what, you're lying? No, he wants to meet you. And then they started reading up his letter, and I was like, wow. And everybody was like, oh my God, there's a celebrity. Oh my God, that's Mari. It was really cool.
And what was the visit like when he came to see you?
The visit was really cool because, like, I got to see him. I ran up and gave him a giant hug. He told me to stay in school and do your homework. And then, you know, he was just talking about inspirational things. And, you know, he said, you're the one who wrote to me. I was like, yeah, I wrote to you. He was like, yeah. And then, like, he had a podium set up where he had talked at. And, you know, there was a whole bunch of the residents. And he was just giving out inspirational speech and telling people that it's going to be okay. And yeah.
Of course, people around the country and around the world know about the problems that happened with the water in Flint, but there's a lot to the story of Flint as a community. What do you wish more people knew about the city you live in?
So basically, some people don't realize that even though Flint still has a water crisis, like it never got fixed, Flint is a really good city. Like, downtown Flint, it's super nice. There are like little shops, you know, there are a whole bunch of really cool people. Like, it's generally like, it's really cool down there. And it's like, it's, you know, I'm just gonna say it again, it's like really cool. But people just think that Flint is just that, you know, that one really terrible city that's bad water that nobody wants to visit, nobody wants to live. No, there are people that come to visit and people that want to live there. And like, that's why I just need people to understand that Flint isn't bad. Like, just because of a water crisis doesn't mean that we're not like a good city.
So a lot of people care about the water crisis, but not everybody's done what you did. You have given away 1 million bottles of water. How'd you get started on that work, and why'd you decide to do it?
I just wanted to help around my community and seeing people that, you know, who had to, you know, go to the store and pick up water. And it was like a really inconvenience because I had to, you know, carry it out to the car from the store and pay a whole bunch of money for it. And I was like, what if I did something that, you know, saves all that time for going to the store and you get it for free? So that's why I did my water drives. And yeah, so I gave out 1 million bottles of water. There are people that were like, oh my God, thank you so much. We also had other supplies and stuff like that to help people through the water crisis. But here's where another thing comes in. So basically, I found out that people were not taking the water bottles responsibly, like they were littering, like it wasn't good for the environment. So I was like, what if I stopped doing this and like did something way better? So I did something totally way better. And I'm going to tell you what I did.
What's that?
I partnered with Hydrovib, a very good water brand that, you know, does filters. And I got my very own water filter. So now it's not.
Uh-huh. No more bottles.
So now it's, you know, a convenience, and like, you know, my water filter is going to help a lot of people. And, you know, there's like a replaceable cartridge, like it filters out lead and bacteria and all that nasty stuff. Like, you get clean, good water, and installs right underneath your sink so you can drink it, you can cook with it. Basically, you're going to have clean water from my water filter.
All right. So you're not just stopping with the water drive. You're thinking to the future, too. One of the things you said is that Flint has taught you that we need to listen to and believe in science and always question even the things we take for granted the most. I wonder how you feel when you see politicians who don't seem to be willing to listen to science, and what you would say to them to try to change their mind or change what they're doing and saying.
So I know, like, a lot of politicians be like, oh, that's not true. They don't, you know, believe in science, like, any, you know, basically they want to say that it's fake news. Mm. No, they really need to understand that what you're hearing is true. Don't try to debunk it and say that, oh, that's not right or that's not true. No, it is true. And, like, politicians need to realize that you need to listen to science. Science is proven, so you have to listen to science.
You know, I think one of the worst feelings in the world is when you're saying something that's important and true, but the person you're saying it to doesn't believe you. Do you think being a kid makes it easier or harder to be believed on important things?
So being my age, which is, you know, I'm 13, but back then, since when I first started, people were not listening to me. because, you know, I was still like a really young kid and that they thought I didn't know what I was talking about. And, you know, adults would be like, you don't know what you're talking about. Are you, that's wrong. So stay inside a child's place. That was like one of the biggest things that I had to overcome and be like, no, I'm going to spread my word. I'm going to say facts. And people still say that I don't know what I'm talking about. No, I'm kidding. A bunch of facts. I know exactly what I'm talking about. You don't know what you're talking about.
It sounds like people have to respond when you hit them with the facts. How does it feel when you see people change their mind or change how seriously they take you in the course of a conversation? Can you remember a story or an example of that where maybe at the beginning of an interaction, somebody, you know, didn't seem like they were taking you seriously, but by the end, you really had them responding to you?
Okay, so when I used to like do like little speeches or whatever, people would give me like really weird stares and I'd be like, oh, shoot, they're probably just like, you know, neutral mood. No. I don't, like, I would just get a lot of stares. I'd be like, what's going on? Why are you guys staring at me like that? And, like, I guess they'd be like, oh, they don't believe you. You don't know what you're talking about. And it's just, I just kind of like, I don't really care anymore.
Well, it sounds like that's going to serve you well in politics, because sometimes you have to just stick to what you believe in, even if it's taking a while to reach people. But another question about politics I had, and I'm just curious, because I know you've met with political leaders in both parties and shared the same message with everybody. But in 2018, you endorsed a candidate for governor, Abdul Sayed, who happens to be an old friend of mine. And you said you hadn't planned to endorse anybody, but you were inspired by his ideas. So I'm wondering, in 2020, did you decide to get involved in any campaigns, and why or why not?
Okay, so I have been like mini campaigns with some people, but like 2020, I was like, I just kind of want to like, I still want to talk about politics and stuff like that, but I just want to like chill out about it. Cause you know, I'm like, I have like a really big opinion about politics, but it's not like a, you know, reasonable opinion to talk about. Like I still do campaigns and, you know, and I still like politics, but it's just like something that I don't, like I want to focus on, but like, this is something that I don't want to like take too much to focus on.
Mm-hmm. And you've got time, but I've heard you say you might run for president as soon as 2044 when you'd be 36 years old. And when you're ready to do that, we should talk, because I know a thing or two about running for president when you're in your 30s, although you might do better than I did. Let's do a little batting practice. If you're running for president and somebody says, why should I support you? What would you say to them?
Here's the reason why you support me if I run for president. One, I will support Black Lives Matter. You know, Black Lives still matter, and they always do. Two, I support, you know, LGBTQ+ and all that. I support trans rights. I support women's rights. I support a lot of stuff. But, like, just basically, like, I support clean water. I support, you know, kids' voices to be heard. I will not put kids inside cages. I will take kids from their families. I will not kill kids. Like, I will just be a really good person. That's why you should support me.
Sounds like a pretty good platform to me.
Yeah.
What do you think 2044 will be like? Do you think it'll be better?
I really hope that 2044 will be, you know, just a little better, as you know, and it won't look like 2020.
But like 2020 is pretty rough, right?
Yeah, but I feel like 2044 is going to be like, I feel like it's going to be like high-tech future stuff. Like, I don't want to go like too much into detail about you know, having robots or whatever, but I feel like 2044 is going to be a really like peaceful year. And I really want it to be like a peaceful year for people.
You know, one of the things I always say about young people is that young people don't get involved enough. Don't pay attention to the news. Don't get involved in advocacy or issues until they get older. Don't vote. You're obviously an exception to that rule. What would you say to other young people to motivate them to be involved?
You have to use your voice. You have to post about it. One thing to get your voice heard, to get your post heard, would be hijacking hashtags. Basically, you would say, if you were posting about like Black Lives Matter or something that's like really important to you that you want your voice to be heard with, post it under that hashtag, and then it will attract different people, and then it will start a conversation about that. That's what I did, and look where I am now. Don't be scared to speak up. You have to be like, you have to have like a good mindset, and like, don't be scared to use your voice, and like, just don't be scared to talk what you want to talk about. Cause like, your opinion is valid, and like, your stuff matters. So just do what you want to do.
Like Mari said, young people have to use their voices, and she has certainly done just that so effectively. She understands the power of a younger generation calling for change, and I expect we will see and hear a lot from her in the future.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.